Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Busby Babe podcast. Colin here on a special roundtable episode, and I'm joined by Polly Questel and Nathan Heinschel. Boys, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Currently under siege in Richmond, Virginia, but we're holding strong right now.
I'm just recovering from the weekend and a bender that ended with me running through John F. Kennedy Airport, watching the first half on my phone, yelling at people, "Get out of my way, let me get a train back to the city so I can get to a bar and watch this game." didn't end well.
There's not a bar in JFK that shows Premier League?
There actually was, but like, why would I want to be there?
Yeah, that's you don't want to spend $8 on a beer.
Yeah, no. I went, gotta get to the home base.
Yeah, well, pretty downer past couple weeks for Manchester United. The news of Marcus Rashford's injury breaking on the same day that we lose 2-0 to champions-elect Liverpool at Anfield in a game that I'm not quite sure how to describe yet, because we should have lost 7-0, but we also could have drawn 1-1. And it just seemed like a pretty fitting performance to show our season so far.
Yeah, it was weird because we could have and should have lost 6-0, but we also very much could have, like you said, we could have drawn 1-1. I would say we should have drawn 1-1. It was weird because we weren't particularly good. We weren't really at the same level as Liverpool either. The gap between the two clubs was so evident, but I didn't think Liverpool were good at all. They scored their goal on a set piece, which they happen to be really good at, and we happen to be painfully bad at defending them and not getting any better at defending them.
Yeah, and I was watching the game with my coworker because I ended up having to be at work, and I remember it's probably about the 75th, 80th minute, and I turned to him and I told him, because at that point United was starting to get a little more confident on the ball, and I was just incredulous at the fact that they were still in the match. And I looked at him, I said, "This game's finishing 1-1 or it's finishing 2-0. Because it got to the point where we just had to push and try and get that goal, which is going to leave us wide open. And then, sure enough, we're wide open.
Yeah, my friend's got this thing. He uses it mostly in college basketball and the NFL, where he says when you see one team is so dominant in a game, but like then you look and they're up by like 8 at halftime, or in the NFL by like 1 score, he said it almost always comes back to bite them and they almost always lose. And I was like, look, we've been such crap today that there's no reason to think that we can come back in the second half and do this, but like this rule is in play because Liverpool have not put us away at all, and like we've been just good enough to think that like maybe we finally just do get a bounce and we put the ball in the net.
Yeah, and we definitely had those opportunities. I think Anthony Martial skied one that he was really kicking himself afterwards for. That he may have, VAR may have ruled it out for a handball in the lead up to it, but maybe our best chance of the game, other than of course the Andres Pereira miss point blank range after Aaron Wan-Bissaka laid a ball back across goal, an empty goal that Allison had, you know, found his way out of the way of.
And yeah, I'm surprised that no one brought that up, because I remember at the bar, as soon as we saw Martial talk about that, and the pundits were killing him, specifically Roy Keane being like, you have to finish that shot. And while I agree that you do, as soon as it happened, before they even showed replays, me and somebody else at the bar, we just turned and we both just said, that hit his shoulder. Like, doesn't matter. Don't worry that he missed it, because if that went in, it's coming back. And no one's really talking about it. And I guess maybe in the future, it's not a big deal because VAR doesn't have to look at it, but maybe in the future we would say things like that where, hey, I think that ball hit somebody's hand in the run-up, so like who cares if they miss, because it wouldn't have counted anyway. And I think that's one of the problems with VAR, but in this situation we obviously wouldn't know, but I don't think it would have counted. The Pereira one, the fact that it wasn't surprising that he missed it, that's how you sum up Andreas Pereira.
You could tell me that Andreas Pereira didn't complete a pass, and without really thinking about the game too much, I'd probably agree with you. He gave the ball away so many times.
Or just dribbled into
horrible situations where the ball was taken from him.
I saw that you were saying that Pereira during the game, you were killing Pereira. You thought he was the worst player on the field. I thought Craig Paulson was the worst person on the field. How he doesn't call a foul on the De Gea play right there is ridiculous. There was also one where like someone tripped Luke Shaw. He like did one of those "I fall on the ball so that you'll blow the whistle," and like he didn't blow the whistle, but also didn't call a handball on Luke Shaw. He was just like, get up and play. And like they did, it was almost as if Liverpool were like, no, we fouled you, so here, take a free kick. The thing about Pereira is, I thought he has certainly played worse this year, and you know he wasn't good, but it certainly wasn't his worst game. He was just Pereira, and like at this point, like you don't expect any more from him, and that sums up Andreas Pereira.
Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of leaning into Pereira all season, I think. And even last year, I didn't really see much from him other than the goal against Southampton that indicated he was becoming anything for us. But it's really just showing, we've talked about this before on the podcast, is the lack of depth that Manchester United have at the moment. And I think I would have started Juan Mata going against Liverpool just because of the fact that he can complete a pass. And when you're playing against a team like that, you're going to be in possession so few times, it seems, going into it, that you need those kind of players that can, you know, send a through ball into your striker who's been waiting all game for it.
Yeah, and I felt like when Mata came into the game too, it clearly changed the dynamic, and the attack seemed mildly more competent. He's clearly feeling himself after the match against Wolves. I mean, I thought he played really well in that match too. And I had seen, I think it was on Full Time Devils, they were complaining because it's like, you know, we can't find any consistency because we're yelling for Mata to get off the field because he's slow and old, and now we're yelling for Mata to get on the field. And it's just, that kind of just sums up where we're at right now.
I mean, he did outrun the Wolves defense somehow in that FA Cup game to get the one goal of the game.
He had a big head start and they caught him. that was my, as soon as he got that breakaway, I went, ooh, I hope you could just get there before they do. and which is why he basically like made his move at the top of the box. Like the chip, he chipped the keeper from so far out, because if he would have tried to go around the keeper, like Wolves defense would have been back.
Yeah. But I mean, is he still the kind of player that you think his football brain, despite his physical limitations, makes him more valuable than Andreas Pereira at this time?
I think it for most of the little depth that we have, it all seems to be situational to me. In a match that we have to press more, the idea of having Mata, because not only does he thread a pass, but you know he can make a run too. But I think Mata could be a more consistent starter if he just had more foundational pieces around him, so that way there wasn't so much responsibility on, you know, each individual position then.
Yeah, that word that you just said, situational, I think is the most important one. With so many of these players, we hear fans complaining all the time, how does Mata still have a contract? How do you have this person on your team? And, you know, Juan Mata was not given a contract to say, hey, come be our number 10 and take on the burden of creativity for the whole season. He's here because you need players. And I think to begin with, there's only like 6-7 guys that should be playing every game. Everything else, you want to build a squad where everything else is conditional. When we play teams where we want to hit you on the counter, Dan James should come in. When we play teams that are going to sit deeper, and I have a piece coming out about this where I touch on it, Mason Greenwood's a better option, but you know, when you want to counter, Mason Greenwood's not a good option there. And Mata's a great player to play in the League Cup. And as what I wrote about Nemanja Matic last week, against the Europa League teams and against the League Cup teams where his pace isn't as important, his football brain isn't. It's great. And it's important because someone's got to play those 90 minutes and let Juan Mata's legs do that. And it's important to have guys in your squad like that. So, yeah, his football brain is still really valuable to this team, possibly more valuable than Andreas Pereira. It's just, unfortunately, he can't compete at the league level the way that we want him to anymore. But why do we have him in the squad? Because we can rest other players in the Europa League games and then the League Cup games and then an FA Cup game and get a really good player in Juan Mata to help us progress in those tournaments.
Yeah, and I expect him to play a role next season even. The supposed rebuild that is going on, even if we bring in a lot of players in midfield over the summer, I only expect us to sign 3 or 4 based on, you know, transfer windows under Ed Woodward. And we're obviously going for attacking midfielders based on who we've been linked to. But as we've seen this season, when you only have a handful of people who are your starter quality, they're going to go down eventually. And you need adequate backups. And I think at this point, Juan Mata is still an adequate backup. He's still a pretty good role player for us. But yeah, with the schedule that we have playing about 50 games a season, he's definitely not going to be able to play week in and week out.
I think he might be. He might prove, especially with Rashford out and the upcoming games that we have, Manchester City and the League Cup aside, he'll probably prove to be pretty useful if they use him the way that like Van Gaal used him on that right wing, where he can cut inside and move around a bit. And maybe put Greenwood down the middle and Martial down the left, or Dan James down the left, Martial in the middle, and just let him play as, like, so he's not in the clutter of the middle of the field to the right wing, but, like, let him be creative off that right-hand side with Wan-Bissaka pushing up and overlapping on him to provide the width.
I wonder how many listeners groaned when you said play Mata on the right wing. I remember not long ago that being the big Twitter topic of Man United Twitter.
Yeah, but you know what? He's performed. He didn't perform well on David Moyes' right wing, where he was like pinned to the touchline. But in the other, when they played him on the right, I mean, even the beginning of year two of Mourinho, when this team was running rampant over teams, Mata was playing as a right wing. The beauty of that team was Mata, Mkhitaryan, Rashford, Lukaku were very interchangeable that year. It was very not Mourinho football. Mm-hmm. They weren't static. And that's what he does. And you could do that when you're up there with Greenwood and Martial and Pereira, is Mata will come into your end of the field and they just move out wide. And it makes it just that much harder to mark people. And eventually someone makes a mistake and you hope that you punish them for that mistake.
Yeah. So I guess transitioning a bit into the big topic of this roundtable discussion. Nathan, you just posted in the Slack, Marcus Rashford not only had that back injury, but he had a floating bone in his ankle, which he's going to have surgery on. I don't expect we keep him out longer than the back injury would, but the fact that he has been playing through this pain because Manchester United are so shorthanded, what do you guys think that says about the squad management of the club? Not I guess, Ollie just yet in terms of player management, but in terms of the people who are in charge of building and maintaining a team that can last a season.
Well, I mean, the report that I forwarded to you guys, it's coming from the Telegraph. They're saying that he's been playing with a floating bone in his ankle for 11 months. And it just makes me wonder what was going on this summer that couldn't be addressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't necessarily need him playing in an ICC. He could sit there and he could get this, you know, whatever needed to be done, and he could rehab from it. I mean, I understand if it was something that maybe doctors are wary about, you know, doing surgery. I understand you don't want to have surgery if you don't have to, but if it's an injury that can also crop back up again from overuse, that, you know, maybe a soccer player who plays 60 plus games a season might overuse, you know, that's something that needs to be addressed. And it just feels like, and Brent's really been harping on this a lot too, it just doesn't feel like things are being managed properly. I mean, even if they are happening behind the scenes, the, you know, the visibility for everybody on the outside doesn't appear to be the case. And it almost feels like the club's being run by Benedict Cumberbatch in 1917, where he's just yelling last man standing. Like, I mean, I don't know what's going on right now. And I had made the comment over the weekend, too, that Rashford's, like, literally injured his back carrying this team because of overuse, and now we're going to pay for those sins.
Yeah, the report that you just sent wasn't surprising at all. When I was tweeting about it this morning and getting involved with some people, and I addressed it. I said we have known that Rashford has been hurt since at the very least the Liverpool match last March, when Mata who started and Lingard came on as a sub and he got hurt and he had to leave as a sub, and Herrera had got hurt and he had to come off, and in the second half Rashford went down with and was grabbing his ankle, and we didn't have any subs left, and he had to play. And everybody's like, well, he's probably done for a while. And we went to Paris, and Rashford played. And it was, you know, we got somebody back from injury, and it was like, maybe they could give Rashford a break now, and he played again. And everybody, I remember the entire second half of the, or, you know, once at in the post-Paris Manchester United, there was always, why is Rashford still playing? He's clearly hurt. And all of a sudden, the goals dried up, and it was noticeable. And it was just one of those things where everybody said, he's clearly hurt. He's not right. Mm-hmm. He's playing injured, and that's why his form is suffering. So we've known about this injury. Now, you're right, Nathan, is why didn't this get addressed in the summer? I would think it was something, you know, he did. We had the injury against Liverpool. He did withdraw from the England squad for their March matches, but he was back out there for the Nations League. And over the summer, maybe he was told, you know, the injury is, it's not going to get worse. You know, you're obviously susceptible to maybe make it worse, but like that would come from a hard tackle, which would hurt you anyway. Not so much like an overuse injury. And Rashford being the player he was, especially the way the season ended with the fans kind of starting to turn on him and reports being like, ever since that the penalty in Paris, he's become a more arrogant player and a more arrogant person. And he wanted to rebrand his image. You know, he knows Lukaku's on the way out. He knows he's going to be the guy. He wants to hit the ground running. So he wants to be there for preseason and get himself through that preseason, because you don't want those muscle injuries that happened when Solskjaer took over to creep back up. And maybe, and doctors probably cleared him and said, you're not going to damage it any further. And Rashford's like, that's all I need to hear. And if the doctor says, yeah, it's going to hurt him, but he's willing to play, the coach is going to play him. And Martial goes down at the beginning of the season. So now you can't give Rashford a day off ever. And, you know, the use keeps happening. So you have to be sitting here being like, well, this kid hasn't been rested ever in a bajillion years. That ankle injury probably never went away. But then you look at what he's doing on the field and you're like, well, he keeps scoring. So clearly it's not affecting him.
Yeah. And I feel like in American sports, there's a lot of talk about injuries and what I guess the dialogue has shifted a lot from, you know, the era of rub some dirt on it to now people are actually realizing some of the major long-term health consequences of playing through sports injuries.
But that's more for your head.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to make an NBA comparison where a lot of players will sit out, you know, X amount of games a season now just for the sake of rest and, you know, maintaining health. But right, yeah, CTE is obviously a very different.
Yeah, level. And in the NBA, also they injure, you know, a little knock on your ankle can really affect your game. In the NHL, at the end of the season, and certainly after every playoff season, it's always fun to read what everybody's going into surgery for, because a team has 20 players and about 17 get off-season surgery because it's like, oh, this guy's been playing with a broken bone in his foot for 6 months. There was a year where the year of the lockout, Ryan Callahan broke his ribs in the second game and didn't get those fixed until the end of the season.
Oh, thank you.
They just don't, you know, when you're in a skate, there's a lot you could do to compensate for some injuries, and people just play on as long as, you know, the long-term health isn't there. So that is what athletes do. And if a doctor sits there and tells Marcus, like, you know, this injury, it's going to hurt, but you ever see the movie Miracle?
Yeah.
So it's
the goalkeeper who plays through the – or no, not the goalkeeper.
Not the goalkeeper, but it's the first game when Robbie McClanahan gets hurt and Herb Brooks goes to the doctor and he says, can he play? And he says, well, you know, he's hurt real bad. And he said, yeah, but if he plays, will he injure it worse? And he says, no, he's just going to be in pain. And, you know, he fires him up and gets him to play. Now, that's the coach being like, get back out there. But the player's attitude is the same thing. Is if I'm not going to if I'm not going to make the injury worse, put me on the field.
See, but that, I guess, brings me to the back injury of Marcus Rashford. Because I feel like it was a stress fracture and it was – hold on. I'll find the exact tweet that we were talking about it with.
It is a stress fracture, and I'm reading something on The Athletic where it's just – or I read something on The Athletic about they spoke to a doctor and a stress fracture. He just says it happens – you know, it happens over time. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to ever say when you recovered from it because some days, you know, it just doesn't hurt. And it's hard just to pinpoint when you hurt it worse because it happens – it happens over time. But go ahead and pitch this because I know that I am the lone wolf on this one. And I want to hear what Nathan says so I can get ready to tell him that he's wrong.
So Marcus Rashford had a single stress fracture going into the Wolves game. And supposedly he had still felt the pain in his back. And he wasn't in a situation where he was totally free from it. Or maybe he was thinking he could play through it. I don't know. And then he comes on against Wolves, he gets hit, falls to the ground, and now it is a double stress fracture. He's expected to be out 2 to 3 months. And I tweeted about this when the news broke during the Liverpool game from Henry Winter, that if that was something that Ollie was aware of, not just the fact that he had the single stress fracture, but also the fact that Marcus was in that moment in a lot of pain, even just sitting on the bench, putting him in seems like reckless endangerment of a player. And I think it's something that should bring to attention the incredible mismanagement of injuries. I mean, this is just the culmination of a couple of months where, you know, Ollie hasn't been super forward with us about the injuries of players. It seems like a lot of muscle injuries have been happening, things that should be preventable in training, and now we've got a player coming on with a stress fracture, and the worst case scenario happens within a couple of minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, just the way the situation's played out, you understand why Pogba has his own team of doctors. I mean, it's always important to go get a second opinion when it comes to anything medical, and I just... It has almost like a Any Given Sunday vibe to it right now, where, you know, the James Woods character is just like feeding guys, you know, extra, you know, morphine pills, and he's telling Lawrence Taylor's character, who has a fracture in his neck, that he can continue playing, even though he knows that if he takes the wrong hit, like, it could potentially paralyze him. And I don't know, it's with something like that with your back, and it's something that needs to be rested, that's really the only way to get over that injury. It really feels like it's institutional negligence at this point, which seems like a weighty legal term. But I mean, I've worked in industries where heavy lifting is involved, and I used to tell my guys, you know, if you come in and you're hurting, you got to let me know, because the last thing I can afford is for you to be hurt long term. You know, like, we can pick up the slack if you're going to be out 2 or 3 days with an injury, but if you re-injure yourself here at work and then you're going to be out for 3 months, we're going to have all kinds of problems. And, you know, that's what the reality is for Manchester United right now. They worked Rashford into the ground, and now they're going to have to, you know, wait months and months and months for him to come back. And instead of having him for now a slate of games that, when you look at our schedule, is not going to be easy coming up, both in cups and in the league. We're going to be missing our best player for very, very crucial games. And I know the argument that's made a lot is, well, the player said he wanted to play. It, at the end of the day, it's on the manager to say, you know what, I've looked at the reports, I know the doctor said that you can play through it, but You know, you can't play. You can't risk it. I can't risk missing you. And it's a comment that Brent's made. It's all of a sudden looking like Solskjaer, who has – he's supposed to be, you know, operating a long-term project. He's starting to look a little short-sighted because he knows that he needs to win games as much as he needs to continue with the rebuild. And unfortunately, with such low depth on the team, he's now gotten in a situation where Rashford's going to be out for a long time because of not having some level of load management. I mean, he's just been playing way too much. He hasn't had a rest at all.
I just came across this on Twitter, and I had a feeling it was about that. It was something like this. No player in the Premier League. I thought it would be no player at United, but no player in the Premier League has played more games than Marcus Rashford since his debut. And that makes sense because even Jose, I don't like to play children, Mourinho came in, and even though Rashford didn't start every game, he played every game until the Tottenham game a year and a half into his tenure. When he signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Ibrahimovic was the starting striker, and Rashford would play off on the left wing. But then when we went to the League Cup and the Europa League, and it was time to give Ibrahimovic a break, Rashford was the guy who started that striker. Not Martial, Rashford. So he's been run into the ground now by not just Solskjaer, but by Mourinho as well. Mm-hmm. But, Con, I think you're right. You are right that if the manager knows that there's something wrong and he's putting him out on the field where it could be made worse, it's a bit of negligence. But like what Nathan said is there's always the element of the guy can play if the guy can play at risk of maybe something long term, but he can play and the player is knocking on your door and saying, put me in, coach, I'm going to do it. And this isn't like the end of last year where Rashford's knocking on his door and saying, put me in, coach, I want to play, I want to contribute. And it's like, cool, dude, but you're hurting and you've scored one goal in the last 9 games. The guy's been injured for quite some time, and he doesn't stop scoring. So, yeah, if I'm the manager and he comes and he says, I know I picked up a knock, but I'm good and I want to play, and I put him out there and he scores again and he helps us win, and then the next week he comes back and he says the same thing, I'm going to put him in. And the injury that he suffered against Wolves was, you did say it, he got hit. He got hit. And which is much better than a non-contact injury. It's much better than just like we ran him into the ground. This was, if he wasn't hurt, it could have happened also. You could say, oh, well, it's an FA Cup replay. And like, did we really need to bring him on for this match? But that would make Solskjaer look a little hypocritical if he didn't do it. He rested the guy. He tried to avoid using him. If we were winning this game, no chance Rashford's coming onto the field. But he has also he's come in and said, I want to bring back the culture of Manchester United. And that culture is, doesn't matter how big our squad is. If we're in a competition, we're playing to win it. And he can't just punt on the FA Cup. He rested Rashford. He played a decently strong team, but he rested some other guys. He said, it's 0-0. We got a chance to win this game. I'm going to bring on my best player to hopefully score a goal in the last half hour because this is a competition that we want to win. And you're right, Nathan. He does talk about this long-term plan, but every time we lose, even without our best players, the criticism is, well, the results aren't there, and all he does is keep hiding behind this long-term plan. So he's aware that in order for the long-term plan to work, he needs to get results now. And that comes down to it, is what Brent says, and is all this negligence about injuries and playing through it. You're right. Solskjaer is not forthcoming with the injuries, and that's a bit of an issue. It makes me question how much he really knows about the injury. It might just be he's pretty hands-off in that regard, and he talks to the medical staff. And the medical staff says, here's what's going on. He could play. And then Rashford knocks on his, you know, he could do with a game of rest, but he can play. And then Rashford knocks on his door and he says, put me in, coach. It could be he knows more than that. And he's just, you know, not forthcoming with the media, which we know for a fact he isn't, because he doesn't need to, you know, spill all the secrets to the media, but this is not a problem that is – this has always been my thing. This is not a problem that is exclusive to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We've had massive injury crisis under Mourinho, under Van Gaal, under Moyes, under Ferguson. It's not a problem that's exclusive to Manchester United. It's not a problem that – you know, it happens everywhere. And like I just said, when we just talked about how he's been playing with this issue in his foot for the last 11 months, he's played 8 times for England in the last 11 months. So Gareth Southgate doesn't have a problem with it either. And England have doctors. You know, when you go to international break, onto international duty, England's doctors test you out, and then and they speak with the club's doctors, and they say, well, he might be carrying the same injury. The two doctors work together to figure out what's the best plan. So England's doctors let him go, and Rashford says, no, boss, I'm good. And remember, going into the October break, he was playing like crap because they were asking him to basically carry all the weight of him and Martial, and everybody said he could really do with 2 weeks off right now. And instead he goes to England and he played 2 more games. So it's not just Solskjaer that's playing him. Colin, you're a historian. Wayne Rooney's your favorite player ever. We both remember that he picked up a season-ending injury against Bayern Munich. Guess who was out there 6 days later to play Bayern Munich again? Shock recovery from Wayne Rooney. He aggravated the injury. He made it worse. The title race started slipping away. So after 3 weeks, Rooney came back. He was a shadow of himself. He did nothing. United didn't win the title. And that injury lingered until January of the following season. And you could argue his career was never the same after that. So this is not a new phenomenon. And it's not one that's exclusive to Solskjaer. It's not exclusive to Manchester United. You know, what happened in the Champions League final? What was the debate about there? What should Harry Kane have even been on the field?
Are you asking us if Harry Kane should have been on the field?
That was the storyline, because Kane was rushed back from injury after he had previously gotten hurt last season and rushed back from that one. You know, Kane's career has been hurting his ankle, rushing back.
Tactically, they shouldn't have brought him back because they played so well without him in the lead up to the final too, but that's a different thing.
I think my problem here isn't really the ankle, because like you said, he's been evaluated for this for over a year by, you know, both club and country, and it was decided that he was fit enough to play. And we've seen from his performances, he's been playing the best football of his life. So obviously his ankle hasn't been hindering him maybe that much. My problem is the stress fracture in his back, because Marcus Rashford comes onto the field and he stays on the field for 16 minutes. And maybe close to half of that time was him limping around waiting for the ball to go out that he could be subbed off.
I have an issue with that. He should have just came off. Play with 10 men.
Maybe it's just coincidental, but when he's on the field for that long and it takes that little time for him to get hurt again with an injury that he had just picked up.
But he got hit. Like, it was a freak play where he got hit. You know, it wasn't like he went back out there and he said, "Whoop, nope, my hamstring hadn't fully healed and I just popped it again."
Yes.
Like, he got hit.
But, I mean, those kind of things happen in this contact sport. That's something that, you know, could happen at training too. It seemed like a routine play where it didn't seem like it was something, you know, extra hard that redid the injury, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
But, I mean, remember that interview that Rob Gronkowski gave a few months ago where he talked about getting a hit in the Super Bowl that said, like, it would keep him up at night for months. And everybody went back into it and they were like, they pulled up the hit he talked about and they said, this was a very routine hit. Football is a lot more violent than we think it is, because a routine hit like this caused Gronkowski that much damage and pain. And this was like a freak play. You know, I know his back had been hurting, and there's all these reports at that charity event last week where he was struggling to sit down. But if you could play through that injury, you know, Rio Ferdinand couldn't sit down on the plane to Munich, and they played him against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. He couldn't sit on the plane because of his back. Like, this Rashford is not the first person that this has happened to, and he's not going to be the last.
Well, it, I guess the argument to that would be it's just things have changed, at least with the spotlight and how we approach injuries and load management across all sports. And it's kind of similar to your example. There's a article that just dropped on the Telegraph again from James Ducker. Before the game against Wolves, Rashford was sitting down for an interview with Ryan Giggs, and he had to stand up for long periods of it because he was so uncomfortable sitting in a chair from his back. And I think where everybody's issue is, at some point, I know the depth is a problem, but at some point you just have to say, no, Marcus, I'm the manager. Sit down. If it's because if it's Marcus that's forcing Solskjaer's hand to play him, then that is a problem managerially, that you're either insecure in your position that you can let a player boss you around that much, or that you've become that desperate. And that's an issue that needs to be addressed.
But you could, but it also could be a situation where, okay, it's hard to sit down, but you go and sit down with the doctors and say, look, here's where his back is injured or hurt. And this is where it's going to hurt him, and this is where it's going to affect him. It doesn't bother him while he's playing. You know, Marcus says, I'm not really in pain while I'm playing. And the doctors may say, look, if he gets hit there, yeah, that's bad. But what are the odds he's going to get hit there? But in terms of everything else that you have to do on a soccer field, the running, the heading, the tackling, that kind of stuff, he can do it, and it's not going to make the injury worse. And then, you know, as a manager, you're inclined to say, okay, go ahead and play. You know, there are certain things where you can, you know, you may not be able to do something in life, but what you need to do, like, your injury doesn't affect you. Like, not to compare myself to any professional athlete, but I've hurt my foot, my ankle before where I could barely walk, but I put in an ice skate and I don't have pain, so I can go out there and play hockey and not be affected whatsoever. And then I take my skates off and I could barely walk to my car to get home. So it could be something like that where, you know, I get it. It hurts to sit down and everything, but the soccer activities that you will do on the field aren't going to make this injury worse. Now, again, you get hit there, that'll be bad, and that could really affect it. But I think there are any things where, you know, it looks like a routine soft play and you just get hit in the wrong spot, whether you have a pre-existing injury or not, and it turns into a big thing. And it was just an unlucky play.
Well, but the back is a huge focal point. I mean, there's a lot of areas to hit on it. And I mean, the play where a guy runs into Rashford feels a little bit more routine. I mean, it could have very easily then happened if Rashford's going up for a header and a defender comes through him from the back. You know, I can think of plays like when Fabinho just comes in and hip checks Daniel James in that first Liverpool-Manchester United match of the season. I mean, like, they're just bang-bang plays happen all the time inside the midfield. When guys are going up for balls, I mean, Rashford could have been on the end of a set piece and somebody could have just ran into him. It feels like the opportunity was there. There was too many opportunities and the risk was too high for him to pick up a further injury on a stress fracture on his back.
You're right. There's a lot of risk. And I do want to make it clear that, you know, I don't really disagree with you guys. I disagree with the notion that how everybody's acting, how this is like an epidemic that is plaguing this year's team, and that it's clearly this coach's staff, because it's not. This has been happening for years. It's not a problem exclusive to United. When you ask how can the doctors and the manager let, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. I really don't know the answer. And I don't know what was said and what could have been said. But it is possible that, you know, they look at your back and they basically say, like, there's 2% of your back. If you get hit in that exact spot, bad. Everything else, like the rest of your back, will absorb the blow. And it's possible he just got hit in the exact wrong spot. It's possible that they said, well, you know, there's 70% of your back. If you get hit there, bad. 30% is fine, and that happens to be the 30% where you're more likely to get hit, so the risk is there, but not as there, and they decided, let's let them play, and if that's the case, yeah, there's a lot of questions, but you know, with these guys are medical professionals, and you do have a kid that's sitting here saying, you know, I want, like, you know, he tweeted after the game, "I'm sorry to let you down." Like, you know, like, you didn't let us down, you got hurt. But, like, that's how bad he wants to be on the field. So if the doctor says, like, "Hey, you know, you got to be careful out there, but, you know, there's a good chance that you're going to make it through this game unscathed." It's more of like, if you get hit in the wrong spot, then that's bad. I can understand why you sit there and say, like, and Solskjaer said, "I'm not playing you from the start." You know, he was kind of like in a, "I'd like to rest you, but break glass in case of emergency or in case we need a goal to advance in this tie situation." And that's what we needed.
Yeah. And I think at this point, if Marcus Rashford were to announce that he's got his own medical team, similar to Paul Pogba, I wouldn't fault him for it, and I hope nobody does. I mean, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but at the end of the day, the medical professionals that, you know, he's probably seeing on a regular basis are still on the payroll of Manchester United. They're still on the payroll of the FA, and at the end of the day, it benefits the organization for Marcus Rashford to play. And so I think if he's got nagging problems and he feels the need, like, hey, maybe this needs to be get looked at more, he should see an independent physician as well, just to make sure. But at the same time, too, he just might be, you know, the next super type A athlete that will do anything to get on the field, in which case you have to then be able to save him from himself. So that's kind of my argument.
And they do. I mean, people are upset that the team's overusing him. Solskjaer's already said we have to drag him off the training pitch. You know, he stays late. He does extra work. So it's not just the club that's overusing him. Like, he is doing it, and he wants to do anything. And maybe he got that second opinion. Maybe the United doctors say, "Hey, you know, you're at risk, but you should be good if you play." And the second opinion is like, "No, the risk is higher than they say it is, but yeah, you could play through it." He's going to be like, "All right, well, I'm taking that risk."
I'm kind of like Nathan. I'm not really buying into the conspiracy theory. Maybe the United's physio team is just awful. But because I think that injury problems like United have had this season are exacerbated by having a small squad available to you.
And that's exactly
we saw that in Louis van Gaal's first season as well, because he had loaned out or sold so many players in that first summer that by the time the injuries piled up, he was calling up, you know, Paddy McNair and Tyler Blackett to pair up in central defense. And even in his second season, that's how Marcus Rashford came into the team, is because there were so few options that he simply had to give an 18-year-old a chance. But I just still keep coming back to this back thing, and it probably was just coincidental that he got hit right in the one spot that would re-injure him. Maybe that's the case, but 16 minutes on the pitch, it just keeps coming back to my head that something obviously was not right, and putting him in was an enormous managerial mistake, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, he's 22 years old, and he's just hit his 200th appearance for United, so I mean, the numbers are just there. He's played so much, and they've relied on him so much that, you know, that the chickens have come home to roost, to use that adage. I mean, he was eventually going to pick up a big injury, and it's finally happened. And so it's clear that the club, and this is probably a segue into the next thing we're going to get into, the club hasn't prepared for it.
Right, but I mean, that is what it is. But like I was saying, that this isn't the first time it's happened. I mean, you bring up Rashford's debut, where he started because Rooney was out, Martial was out, and Will Keane, like, picked up an injury the game before. And Will Keane had barely even been playing, so we had to turn to Rashford, who had made the bench like twice that year. But if you look around the rest of the squad, Lingard was out of favor, and he was playing that game. Memphis Depay had long been dropped. He started that game. The back four was Joe Riley, Daley Blind, Carrick started at center back, and Guillermo Varela. So that's basically that's two midfielders. Blind more of a converted into a defender at this point, but was a defensive midfielder at the start of the season. And two academy kids. On the bench was Donald Love, Paddy McNair, Regan Poole, Marcos Rojo, and Andreas Pereira. And this was very, very youth academy Andreas Pereira. So, you know, it's not the first time that injuries have hit this club. But, John, you're 100% right when you said it's exacerbated by the small squad, because when you look at it right now, who's injured? The injuries have been piling up all season. Who is injured right now? We have two midfielders out, a forward out, and a backup center back. That's four players, which is a totally normal amount of injuries to have, especially at this point of the year, coming off of the festive period, and a team that's in the League Cup semifinal, so they have to play that extra game at January. Four people. That's a totally normal amount of people. It's just the fact that one's the best midfielder on the team, one is the best forward on the team, one is a really, really, really important player on the team. You know, it's three of the worst guys that you could have injured are the ones injured, but it's only four guys. And yeah, part of that's exacerbated by the size of the squad, because maybe McTominay and Rashford could have played a little bit less if we had just another player or two in their position that we could have just spelled them a game here, a game there.
Yeah. And I think you brought up an interesting point too with Wayne Rooney, that I think if this maybe happens, we're not questioning Sir Alex as much if he's the manager as we are with Ollie. Because you know, he has that legacy and success, and they were in a title race, whereas now we're in a situation where people have already been calling for Ollie to be sacked anyway, and you know, basically looking for more reasons to criticize him. I still think this is a legitimate criticism of him, and I tweeted, you know, maybe he should be fired if he knew that Rashford was his back was hurting. I think that was definitely more of an emotional tweet than I'm
your
thinking.
Your outlook is different than what the average one is saying. Because you're really tweeting, saying, you know, he should lose his job because of negligence if he knew that the injury was worse than it was, as opposed to everybody else who keeps saying, oh, he doesn't care that players are injured. He keeps throwing them back out there and it's blowing up in his face. And this management team doesn't know how to handle injuries. There's a bit of a difference there. Yours is much more like it's this specific situation, especially given his back and everything, is what it comes off as, and that it's more like you put the player at risk, as opposed to, oh, this management team clearly doesn't know how to handle injuries, and why do so many people get injured under this manager when, no, like, we've had injuries since the beginning of time. And, oh, by the way, the manager that we had before Solskjaer, he sat down at the press conference last year and publicly called out his players and said, you know, some of them have just little injuries that they could easily play through and they're not playing. And he said the same. And guess what? He did the same thing a few weeks ago at his new job.
That's right. The Tanguy and Ndombele situation.
Yeah. You know, he tried to shame him when he said, and Ndombele says he can't play. So I guess he can't play. He's hurt a little. You know,
he literally said, I can't say that it's an injury.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, like our last manager literally shamed players for not playing while they were injured. And now we're yelling at Solskjaer because when McTominay and Rashford knock on his door and say, I know I picked up a knock, I know my foot's hurting me, but I want to play. And those guys come in and McTominay came back from his injury a bit early to play against Tottenham and City. And by the way, he was like the best player on the field in those games.
Well, I think at this point, probably the most important signing for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is that Neil Ashton is joining the PR team, because it's probably like that gif of Donald Glover from Community when he shows up with the pizza and the house on fire. like that's got to be Neil Ashton's first day at work, because he's probably like, what in the hell did I just get myself into with the visibility of just people think Ollie's mismanaging. Clearly, everybody thinks Woodward's mismanaging. Rashford's hurt. Liverpool's about to win the league. Yeah, I mean, it's just right now there's so many fires that have to be put out. And that's also what's then contributing to the whole, you know, Ollie and his management of injuries, is because there's so many different things institutionally that are piling up that – everything is getting, you know, microscope focus now. So, unfortunately, that is also a, you know, that's just because you're the manager of Manchester United right now, if this much stuff was going on, people would be laying into whoever was the manager. Unfortunately for Ollie, because he is still a relatively green manager as far as managing in the Premier League, you know, he's really taking stick for it, and that's just that's the deal. That's part of the job.
Yeah.
The biggest problem that Neil Ashton's going to have is, like you say, he has to come in and put out a lot of fires, but it would not shock me if the fire extinguishers at Old Trafford don't work.
Well, yeah, because they forgot to buy new ones after selling the old ones.
Right, but post-fake bomb scare. I completely forgot what I was going to say next. So
I think you were alluding to Bruno Fernandes not joining Manchester United.
Don't get me started there.
Yeah, I guess that would be something.
I'm depressed enough talking about Rashford. Let's talk about another awful topic.
Yeah, the Bruno Fernandes deal. Look, I think that news broke during the Liverpool game as well. Actually, that. Bruno, the Sporting had stalled out with Manchester United.
Do you think that's a coincidence?
No, they did. They did a Friday news dump during the biggest game of the season. I mean,
do you even think? Wait, it's not for Sporting on Sporting's behalf. It's not a Friday news dump. Do you think it's a coincidence that the Rashford injury happens and all of a sudden it's United? They're going to be without Rashford and. All of a sudden, Bruno Fernandes costs 30 million more. Do you think for a minute that that's a coincidence?
Well, what I think what I've come to grips with at this point is I shouldn't let my Fubo TV subscription run out if I want to watch Bruno Fernandes. I got the free trial last week for the Lisbon Derby, and if I want to continue watching him, it's probably going to be in Portuguese.
I mean, do you really want to pay $20 a month to watch the Portuguese league?
I mean, there's other games too, but
I assume that they're all. I mean, I think it was. I went through and I watched a Bruno Fernandes like highlight reel clip, which is supposed to make him look like Superman, and I could not have been more underwhelmed by it. And I think it was the Slack channel where I threw a GIF in there, and I think it was Brent who literally he responded, "Whose testimonial was that?" I mean, that was the quality of defense that we were looking at,
Polly. When he passed the ball, did it go to somebody on his own team?
Yeah, but he's that open.
Paul,
you give Andres Pereira that kind of time, and he can make that pass too.
I like how you knew where I was going with that. I think my hatred of Andres Pereira is not hidden anymore.
Right, well, I mean, I trust me. Like, I hate Andres Pereira too. I mean, I've written countless articles at the beginning of the season talking about how garbage Andreas Pereira is because he still had his Andreas Pereira posse of everybody being like, well, he's not playing number 10, so you have to give him a chance there, and he's really good. And it's like he's done nothing to show that he's really good. It's like Angel Gomez. Like, I'm sorry, I love you, I think you're really good, I really want you to make it here, but you've done nothing to show that you deserve more playing time. Bruno, like, the defense in the Portuguese league is a joke, and the first thing I showed was a clip of, like, him running at people and whatever, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I tweeted it, I'm like, I'm sorry, like, you just don't score goals like this in England. And the follow-up was, I know I'm about to hear this joke a lot, and I did, but he's not going to get the opportunity to do this to Phil Jones because Phil Jones is on his team. Yes, if Phil Jones is against you, then you get to score goals. Like, you get to make defenders look stupid like he did. But for the most part, you don't score. Like, the goals that he's been scoring, that you just don't get them in England. And this is a guy who flailed out in Italy. And while I 100% agree with you, Colin, that he is better than Pereira, and I 100% think that he helps this team this year, but he is not a 60 million, 70 million, 80 million pound player. And you could ridicule the notion all you want, but United are right. If they spend 80 million on this guy, the price for players that'll actually help them, because Bruno will ultimately be nothing more than the squad player. if you actually, or if you want to win things, if you want to compete at the top, he'll be a squad player. He'll be a top end squad player, but he'll be a squad player. And the price for the players that you actually need will just get higher. And I don't think there's as much money in the chest as Manchester United says there is. So if you are going to walk away from this deal because Sporting are trying to screw you and all of a sudden you're not getting a good deal, that's not a bad thing.
Well, Polly, I hate to bring this up, but if City are actually linked for £80 million,
they are. Then oh my God! Get
then
out
Ed
here.
Woodward is about to spend £90 million on Bruno Fernandes.
This is the oldest trick in the book, and this is exactly why I was skeptical about him in the summer, because this is so common out of Portugal. It's just agents linking things. They throw every name out there, and this is why when we are out there this summer saying we want players that want to come to United, and there's and everybody's saying, well, Bruno wants to come, and it was like, yeah, Bruno's been linked to United. He's been linked to City. He's been linked to Tottenham. He wants to go everywhere. That is agents trying to get him more money and trying to get themselves more money. And now that this story breaks where United are walking away, suddenly City, a team that don't need Bruno Fernandes at all, a team where Bruno Fernandes does not fit them, are going to spend $100 million on him? Get out of here. That is either the agents or that is Sporting linking something completely false to the media to try to dupe Ed Woodward, because history shows that that kind of stuff works. And that's why I think it's important, as much as it would hurt us to not close this deal, if Ed Woodward, if they are pushing Ed Woodward around and bullying him, and he walks away and lays down the thing and says, you know what, I am not getting bullied around on the negotiating table anymore, that's not a bad thing.
I think where I get hung up on the whole thing, because I agree with you, we need to be more ruthless in our business. It's clearly something we haven't been. We've just been, you know, throwing money around, and it's not worked out. I think what's frustrating is I don't know who does the negotiations of the deal, but at this point, it's
Matt Judge.
It's one of those things where this should have been a win-win situation from the get-go. Manchester United needs a midfielder. Sporting Lisbon needs money to continue operations. That's been widely reported. You know, they seem to bring it up once a week on the continent. Andy Brassel really seems to have his, you know, finger on the pulse there. It's one of those things like Sporting needed to bring in money. Bruno Fernandes could bring in that kind of operational cash. How is it that we could not just look at each other and go, you need money, we need this guy, let's make a deal? Like, it's gotten so messed up, and you knew the moment it took more than like a week after the transfer window that it was going to get messed up.
I'll tell you exactly why. I don't think it's messed up yet, because it's only January 20th. And here's why. Because first of all, Portuguese teams notoriously are pretty shiesty. Second of all, you're dealing with Ed Woodward, who has been bullied before. You know, teams have fleeced him in the transfer market before. He got almost the money he was looking for Lukaku this summer, but ultimately didn't. He called up Leicester and he said, I want Harry Maguire. And they said, we're going to sell him to you for $80 million. And he spent the entire summer trying to negotiate them down. And ultimately, 2 days before the season went, oh, I'm out of time. $80 million it is. So Woodward's playing hardball, and they're saying, well, we have this guy that everybody is trying to take advantage of. Let's take advantage of him. And I don't blame them for trying. And especially when Rashford went down, they go, well, now they're really desperate, so now it's raised the price even more. I don't blame them for trying. But this, I want to say it was on The Athletic that I read it right at the beginning of the transfer window, and they're like, there was a reason that deals go down like at one of two times in the January window. They either go down on January 2nd because everybody's gotten them done right away, or it goes down to the last 5 days because everybody sits around really doing, like, why are they selling me this player? It's obvious because they, you know, don't want the player anymore. They need to get rid of him. They want to clear the wages, etc. Or it's, in this case, Sporting need the money. So ultimately, Sporting know that if it's an operational thing, they can only play hardball for so long. Do United need Bruno Fernandes now? Yes. Would he help them against City in the League Cup? Liverpool in the FA Cup? Probably. But ultimately, if it goes down to January 31st, he'll still, the way that Chelsea are doing everything but winning, he'll still give them a good chance at catching Chelsea and finishing in the top four. So United could wait them out and get the deal they want. And I do think it'll ultimately go through. I do think eventually Ed Woodward will budge on his price, but it'll more be the issue is that Woodward's kind of said 50 million plus incentives, and Sporting's been like the incentives are too hard to get, which I absolutely agree with, doing incentives for this guy who's unproven, but I think they'll make the incentives a little bit easier to get, and they'll be more likely that it'll go up to 60 million. But I think both sides will give a little, and it'll get done because, again, Sporting do need the money.
I think at this point, if the Bruno Fernandes deal doesn't go down, this would be one of those situations where if ownership was paying attention, they would look at their negotiators and be like, how has this occurred? Especially when they see things like Minamino and Haaland both being signed before the window even started. You know, it's one of the, like, how are my, when we have these needs, how are my guys not getting them done? And you would hope if the Glazers gave a shit, they would address that, which they clearly don't. And they're just going to continue as is. But that would be something that would, you know, ring alarm bells if I own the team.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that has been happening to Woodward for the past couple of years now, ever since, you know, the June window became a thing where, I mean, we signed Daniel James, it seemed about a week and a half to 2 weeks after we were initially linked with him in the first place. That's maybe the quickest Ed Woodward's gotten a deal done.
Not just linked with him, but like basically like the deal's done.
Right. And Paulie said, it took 2 months to get Harry Maguire done. It took
Wan-Bissaka took over a month.
Yeah, and we had been scouting Wan-Bissaka since I think that January when Ole had first noticed him. So that was something that, you know, our interest had been known for a while by that point. So it wasn't, and that's maybe that's one of those things the fan want. They want that, you know, rush of chemicals to their brain seeing, oh, we're linked to this guy, and the next day it's done. You know, we just don't get that at Manchester United.
But, I mean, here's the question. Do you think a change would actually happen? And here's, I mean, like, do you think, you said if ownership cares, there's no reason to think that ownership cares, and not for any Manchester United reason, but this, I'll give you this. The Glazers own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Their general manager is Jason Licht. He's been there since 2014. Zero playoff appearances. They finished fourth in their division in his first year, then fourth. Second, fourth, fourth, third. The NFL is a place where general managers last 2 or 3 years, and Jason Licht is still there. Do we really think Ed Woodward's going anywhere?
No.
I don't think anybody does.
Which, at this point, if
that's soon. That's going to be soon.
If we don't get back in the Champions League, maybe. But, I mean, even then, we've tolerated mediocrity for 2 years in a row, at least.
Well, if we don't get back in the Champions League, now it has financial repercussions because then the Adidas deal goes down. So we lose out on 2 years of Champions League money, and now our shirt deal is worth even less. And we're already creeping into we're not making any money anymore. So then, yeah, maybe something will have to change. In which case, I can't imagine them firing a manager and paying three managers at the same time once again.
Have we explored the possibility of Mike Evans playing center forward?
Target man, Mike Evans.
I don't think transfers work as easily between the NFL and the Premier League the way that they do when Manchester City just gets to cook their books and like send players on loan to NYCFC and then like rewrite contracts.
Yeah, I was about to say, is this like a Frank Lampard situation?
Or like when they like sold Mix Discord to themselves so that they could get his salary off the books for NYCFC.
I mean, actually, no, we don't want Mike Evans. I just remembered he gets hurt every season, and they only play 16 games.
Although, Jameis Winston's contract is up, so if they still want to throw 30 interceptions next season but don't want to extend Jameis Winston, we could just send Andres Pereira over there.
I was going to say, you're worried about Andres Pereira not being able to pass to his own team, and you want Jameis Winston.
For the record, I would like to announce Andres Pereira. I have no qualms, and if you need a graphic designer / social media guy, I got you.
I mean, I tweeted it last week that, you know, not in the big games, but since the Bournemouth loss, Andres Pereira's numbers have gotten better. And they are not good, but they are not like bad. He has been minorly useful in a lot of these wins. He didn't play in like the big, you know, like he didn't play against Tottenham or City, and I don't even think he played against Watford really that much. And our record with him has become better than without him, and he's becoming somewhat useful when he plays the attacking mid, not when he plays as a center mid. Him and Matic have been okay against the crap teams, but him and Fred is a center midfield without a spine, and it's a big problem. You know, we've seen that stat where they've given up seven of the 20 something goals that we've conceded in the 200 minutes they've been on the field with them. It's not good enough, but it's like he's kind of become, if he can keep playing like this, he's good enough to be your attacking midfielder next year when you play Newcastle at home and you want to give your James Madison or Jack Grealish or Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba a rest so that, you know, you don't overuse them and get hurt.
Yeah, I think that's my ideal use for Bruno, or for Andres Pereira.
Well, that's exciting to hear, at least a small positive for Andres Pereira from Pauly, because it was starting to feel, if I can make the first ever reference to I Think You Should Leave on this podcast, I'm hoping I'm making the first ever reference to I Think You Should Leave. Andres Pereira is chunky. Figure out what you do.
I used that in reference to Luke Shaw when he came back. I actually called him Chunky. It was like, we just need to figure out what Chunky does.
Well, that's because Luke Shaw's thick, but
yeah.
He's just a natural. He's just a big boy.
He's not like Hazard thick, but you know.
Aiden Hazard this year. Woo!
Yeah, it's almost like he's not a player that scores 20 goals a season consistently, and he's not going to fix all of Real Madrid's problems.
It's almost like 28-year-olds are kind of – it's too late to buy 27, 28-year-olds, and that's why the market's about to shift. And Paul Pogba ain't getting the big deal that he thinks he's getting because teams aren't going to come after it. Yeah. And it's also why nobody wants Christian Eriksen.
Well, we're going to have to wrap things up because we are approaching the – I think we're well over an hour now. But this has been a great episode, guys. This has been our first roundtable episode featuring more than just two people. And I think this is something we're going to try and do again in the future. This is something that the three of us have talked about for a while now.
Yeah, I'm excited. I loved it. Enjoyed this greatly with you guys.
Hey, wherever I can spread the praises to the best show of 2019, I Think You Should Leave, I will take that platform and I'll run with it.
And I think Ed Woodward should leave. And if the Glazers are listening to this, I would like to share that in the high levels football simulation known as FIFA 20 career mode, I was able to talk Barcelona down to £134 million plus Alexis Sanchez for Lionel Messi. So if anyone's got the negotiating chops to turn things around at Old Trafford, it's yours truly.
Dude,
that would work. Messi is an Adidas player, so let Adidas be able to flock Messi in United jerseys. They might want.
We would fund that transfer fee in the first window of selling Messi T-shirts at Manchester United, I think.
And you know how it would end? It would be like when Wayne Gretzky went to the Rangers.
Well, hopefully it's more like when Wayne Gretzky went to the Kings and he was still really good for a while.
It'll be like when Michael Jordan went to the Wizards.
That was in his prime, yeah. Wayne Gretzky's final year at the Rangers, he scored 7 goals. So, like, at least Jordan with the Wizards, like, dropped 50, like, twice and had a couple of 40-point games. So if Messi, like, turned back the clock 3-4 times a season, that would be great. but it could easily end up being like Alexis with Manchester United.
Well, what's sad is if it's like the Gretzky example, I think everybody would give their left foot for a guy that can score 7 goals for this team right now.
Yeah.
Wow, what a great note to end the podcast.
Go Capitals.
All right.
I'd score one from Maguire.
Well, what's the point of being called Slabhead if you can't head in one goal? Like, he's got this big dumb head and he's not using it properly. It makes me sick.
He got the nickname at the World Cup where he scored only one goal. We all think he scored more. It was only one. And he averages one goal like every 17 and a half Premier League games in his career. So, like, he's really not far off the pace. Also, hard to score a goal on a corner when, you know, we can't beat the first man.
Yeah, Chunky was serving up a better ball.
Wait, is this Chunky Anders Pereira or Chunky Luke Shaw?
Either.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out the Busby Babe for all your Manchester United, or apparently I think you should leave Manchester United comparisons. That's actually a good article idea, Nathan. We should talk about that later.
Absolutely.
Be sure to keep an eye out for tactical analysis coming out pretty frequently now from Polly. And Nathan, you have anything coming out that you want to plug?
Sounds like I'm doing a piece about I think you should leave. I'm several weeks away from Brent maybe just driving down here and forcing me to write something, because I have not put out a feature in since the three in the back Nathan Damas piece. So,
oh, wow.
I had the Christmas thing, but that was me like half asleep from work. Writing that, so I don't know if that was my best effort, guys. I apologize for not writing more.
That's fine. Polly, you said you were working on something recently too, right?
Yeah, I have a piece about how we've changed our style playing against these teams that sit back. We've really, you could tell unfortunately there's a lot of Liverpool in how we play, and that should be coming out within the next day or two.
Cool. So keep an eye out for that, and be sure to follow us on Twitter. And I've been Colin.
I've been Nathan. Make sure if you take a big mud pie, don't take too small a slice of toilet paper.
I've been Pauly, and remember, people have been getting hurt since the beginning of time.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.